Hello and thanks for joining us for this week's Big Boat interview. In this episode, we caught up with classic yacht owners Rory and Elizabeth Brooks. They own the 32-metre 1972 Fedship Heavenly Days, as well as the 15.5-metre Hera. I caught up with them as they're on board Hera, fresh from a Fedship Heritage meeting, and just before they set off for the Champagne region in France. Good morning. I understand you guys are in Antwerp, currently on board Hera. How is it?
It's rather cold, to be honest.
Is it?
It's not the kind of climate that we're mostly used to boating in. Normally, we would be on Heavenly Days in the Mediterranean, where one has a fair crack at the sunshine and blue skies and blue sea.
So what's led you to be on board Hera instead of Heavenly Days then?
So this last week was the annual reunion of the Fedship Heritage Fleet, where all the vintage and heritage Fedship boats get together. And that took place in for the first time in Rotterdam. And it's the first time in 3 years we've done it properly. And we and another boat, which is moored alongside us here, decided to take a journey south to Antwerp for the week. The boats are slowly going to meander their way over to Paris. And then we're going to pick the boats up again in Paris in July and meander our way into Champagne country before the boats make their way back to Amsterdam.
That doesn't sound bad to me. I have to say, for summer plans, I'm quite jealous. How much time do you spend on each boat? Is it rare that you spend that long on Hera, or do you kind of split your time equally between the two?
Well, of course, like everything else, things have been disrupted. But generally, we would have gone to Amsterdam probably 4 or 5 weekends a year to stay on Hera. And then during those visits, we would go somewhere in the Netherlands overnight or even for a day. There are lots of lovely historic towns and villages, you know, within sort of 2 to 4 hours cruising from Amsterdam. So that would be here. This is the first time we've done a long trip, you know, a week. Normally it's a long weekend. So we're just finding out what it's like to spend a whole week on this boat.
Meanwhile, there's a bit of a traffic jam because the younger members of the Brooks family also like spending weekends on here in Amsterdam. Who
right.
wouldn't? And so there's going to be a bit of a booking blockage during July and August. So, and they'll be on the boat a bit later this year.
And do you spend much time together all on board as a family, or do you tend to have grown-up time and kids' time separate?
I would say now on Heavenly Days, we always have a full week to 10 days together as a family, which is part of our summer stay on Heavenly Days, which usually lasts about 3 weeks. On Hera, I think we've all accepted that everybody's quite grown up now. And so they tend to, you know, they'll have their weekend, we'll have our weekend.
Where are you based most of the time?
Personally, we live in London most of the time. So London, where West London is our home. Hera lives in Amsterdam and Heavenly Days lives in Mallorca.
Right. And when you mentioned, you know, spending summers in the Med earlier, is that all of the Med or are there particular places where you love to go and you kind of always return to?
Well, either side of the main season, we visit Heavenly Days in Mallorca and we have, you know, long weekends on her. As soon as the sort of season kicks off, because we charter Heavenly Days, she sets off for, you know, a different destination every year. And we ourselves like to go somewhere different every year. So, for example, this year we're going to Greece and we've been fortunate enough to attract some charters that take us from Mallorca to Greece, where we will board in the first week of August.
I was going to ask actually how your charters are going, because we keep hearing it's a kind of record year for charters and boats are getting very booked up. Is that your experience?
Yes, this is turning out to be a very good year, not least because very early on we got a long September booking. With the crisis in the Ukraine, bookings stopped for a while. And a bit of July, but that's now been rectified. So we're probably going to have one of our busiest, if not our busiest season.
Really?
After a couple of years of hiatus, I think people like the idea of a private holiday, which can get away from places and can be away from crowds. I think it's quite popular.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's what we're hearing kind of across the board. So it's interesting to get more reports of it. But let's talk a bit about, we kind of focus on Heavenly Days to start off with, because that's probably more like what our readers are used to size-wise. So let's talk a bit about the boat. How did you come to buy her? And did you know what you were looking for from the beginning, or did you kind of stumble into it?
Actually, I think the honest answer is we stumbled into it. We weren't naturally boat people. We spent quite a lot of our summers in our home in the Caribbean when the children were young, and we decided we needed to be in the Mediterranean, but we didn't know where. So we decided that we should find a place that goes everywhere, and decided to look bravely and with not much knowledge for a boat. So it was a big, bold decision. We've now been the owner of Heavenly Days for, we're just about approaching our 20th year.
Wow. Okay. So, well, and did you look at kind of other boats at the time? Was there a lot of competition, or how did you actually find out she was for sale, and how did the sale go?
I think even though we weren't boat people, we had chartered boats, sailboats and motor yachts. And actually fairly quickly, I think it's fair to say we developed an eye for classic boats. And so when the time came to buy a boat, we only looked at classic motor yachts, because that's what we respond to, and because they offer, you know, very comfortable accommodation for two families or four couples.
One of the things that stimulated us is we had chartered a modern boat, which had broken down in the south of France. And so we ended up being in a port for a few days. So we thought we'd look at some other boats, and we were given permission to go on a older boat that was sitting next to us, which was just being looked after generally. A few weeks later, we had to make a decision. We're going to buy a boat. We go through various offers. We don't like these boats, etc. But eventually we put an offer on a boat called Heavenly Days, which was, of course, the boat that had been sitting next to us that one year ago.
Okay.
It just was kismet. It was just destined to be. We said, yeah. No, it's the same boat. We love it. It had the perfect distribution of cabins for us. And as sometimes happens, the first thing you see is the best.
And did you remember when you first went on board thinking, oh, this is nice, I wouldn't mind owning something like this one day? Or was it only when it came up for sale that you suddenly thought, ah, I remember that. That was great.
I think we always admired the exterior of classic yachts. The interiors are hugely varied because they've generally been through, you know, quite a lot of owners. Heavenly was built in 1972, or launched in 1972. And the 70s were not a great period for interior
taste.
Design. No. So we had to have a bit of vision on that, and which we've managed to do, I think. But with everything we've done with both yachts, we've tried to enhance the classic details, and that's our starting point.
And did you ever have, you know, so you found this boat, you remembered her from before, you bought her. Did you have any kind of moment of buyer's remorse where you suddenly thought, gosh, what have we done? Or was it, you know, were you just excited from the get-go to make her your own?
Somewhere in your list of questions, there is the question, have there been any difficult moments in owning a boat that is rather more extravagant than we anticipated? And the answer for that is the difficult moments are called February and March.
Okay.
It hardly needs explanation.
Yeah.
It's when winter bills come in, but you're still a long way from getting back on the boat.
Yes.
It's an old joke, but I think that we've had to realise that you can't do care for a boat like that in episodes. It's a constant issue. And so we did one major refit, but what we're doing now is we have a 5-year rolling program of things that need to be done over the next 5 years. And then we've completed 1 year. We produce the plan for the next 5th year. So it helps us budget, plan, gives us a clear program of what needs to be done, diminishes the number of surprises, and gives captain, crew, and all the support that we need a clear plan of what we need to do. We find that actually much easier than doing nothing for 5 years and then having a major go at it.
It's,
And it's old boats. Everything needs renewing at some point. So having a rolling program has been much the better way for to do it.
And where do you do all your refit work? Do you return to the same place time and time again, or does it depend on what needs doing?
So it gets taken out of the water in Mallorca. We used to be in Palma, but now we're in Port Adriano, which is smaller, more convenient for our crew. And they have a whole range of suppliers and work people. And frankly, some of our own crew are very competent at quite a lot of the crafts themselves. So it's a shared program. We obviously set a budget for that each year. But we have a long-standing, really competent crew, and they're part of the program. They also share our love for the boat. So we're not like putting it out to tender with different parties. We are the prime, we're effectively our own prime contractor.
Yeah. And is there anything about her that you think, God, if I was to design this boat again, I wouldn't have that on board? Or is it pretty much how you would like it?
I think it's very rare we're sitting on Heavenly Days and wishing she were different. I think that's true to say, didn't you?
We've only ever owned two boats. They're both they're classic boats, heritage boats, so we don't have much experience of everything else. There are so many things about it we appreciate that the things that are less likeable aren't very obvious. It's a matter of pride to us that you drive both of these boats into a port and people say, gosh, that's a nice boat. And I'd have to say one of the characteristics of both of these boats is almost a complete absence of plastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I can even tell, even just from the small bit of you that I can see, it's very non-plastic. You can't see anything there.
No.
Yes, I suppose that's quite rare, but also rather lovely.
It's very lovely.
Yeah.
And do you find you get a lot of attention when you come into port? You know, is it the sort of boat that people come up to and ask you about and that sort of thing?
People do. With large yachts, people tend not to fraternise very much in ports. This is actually an interesting question because we were asked this by a friend who was on the boat, who's not in the yachting world, and said to us the other day, oh, you must meet lots of people who have yachts. And we said, well, we don't really, because most people who are on a large yacht want to be private.
Really? That's interesting.
But on the other hand, you get people walking up and down the quay, you know, who are taking their sort of daily constitutional, and invariably they stop and look at our yacht. We've also had past captains come along.
Really?
Yeah.
Or past crew and say, oh, here's Heavenly. I remember when I was on her in Antigua or
yeah,
was.
And what do they make of what you've done in terms of the refits?
Well, if you didn't come on board, she wouldn't look that much different. I mean, she doesn't look particularly different. It's only if you came on board that you might notice that certain things have been reconfigured. But there have been no classic details that have been ripped out unless it's been absolutely necessary.
And it's funny that you mentioned meeting people, because one of the things I wanted to ask you, for me, when I interview owners, it quite often seems that classic owners are sort of in a little subgroup of their own. And, you know, there are things like the FedShip Heritage Fleet, which you mentioned, and there are kind of little subsections only for classic owners. Do you feel that? Do you feel that you're in a kind of different group to other superyacht owners with kind of big sun seekers? Or do you think actually a superyacht owner is a superyacht owner no matter what boat you have?
I'm not sure I completely know the answer to that question.
I think super yacht owners are a highly variable group of people. It's like saying, oh, do people who own large houses with swimming pools all sort of come together and have a lot in common?
Yeah.
I think they're all very different. I think here in the Netherlands, these smaller yachts that have been cruising up and down canals, waterways, lakes, there's much more of a sort of sailing fraternity.
Yeah.
Than there is in the super yacht class.
Mm.
And of course, among sailboats, there's a very strong fraternity among small sailboats.
And Charlotte, let's not forget, when we bought Heavenly Days, a 32-metre boat, 20 years ago, it was a decent-sized boat. Now, sort of minnow. look at everything, none of 50 meter plus boats that have been built.
Yeah.
70 days has shrunk, but the market has grown. And that's where sort of mega yachts are now. They're all 50, 75 meters and above. And FedShip themselves are building 100 meter boats. And just as an aside, at the FedShip reunion, you can have a small wooden boat built by, you know, a two generation ago member of the De Vries or Van Lent family that will be no more than 5 or 6 meters long, with some other boats like Hera, etc. And behind the shed wall, they're building a 100-meter boat. It's just amazing to see the golden thread that runs through from their craftsmanship and the fact that effectively it's been run by two families since they started.
I mean, it is incredible. We had our World Super Yacht Awards last weekend, and as a little exercise, we had a look at kind of who's won the most awards ever from the different yacht builders. And FedShip is by far and away, they have won so many more than anybody else ever, to the point where it seems unlikely anyone would ever overtake them because, they just have this incredible, legacy of just amazing shipbuilding.
And it's fair to say that we were completely unappreciative of that at the time.
Really?
That we bought every day. But when Heavenly Days turned 40, because she's 50 this year.
Okay, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. turned 40, we rang up FedShip and said, we don't know you, you don't know us, but we've got a 40-year-old boat of yours. Could we come and talk to you? And to our immense surprise, you know, half the De Vries family showed up and they had impeccable records and were very thrilled that somebody took the time and interest and care to find out about the history of the boat. And we have photographs from the laying of the keel. The archbishop, it was an Italian gentleman who bought it, with the bishop blessing the boat upon launch. Some of those photographs are on the boat today. But those conversations led FedShip to think about, we've got a great heritage. We want to enjoy it more.
Mm.
The culmination of that was the creation of the FedShip Heritage Fleet. And so we accidentally had a catalytic part to play in the generation of that. And as we went to last weekend, you see lots of these boat owners, they're now friends with each other, and a whole community is being created. And we're very thrilled to have played a small minor part in helping put that together.
Yeah.
But it's built around craftsmanship and excellence.
I have heard that their archives are kind of, a sort of Harry Potter-esque room full of folders covered in ribbons and something really quite amazing.
That is true. Their archive is impressive. And you know, they presented us with a sort of brown manila folder. and, you know, it wasn't a very big folder, unlike the kind of folder you would have today. Well, there wouldn't be a folder. There would be, you know, multiple digital files covering the build of a yacht. But no, this was just one folder with the invoice sitting on the top. Yeah. And quite
in Dutch guilders.
and, you know, quite a lot of interesting paperwork drawings. And the photographs were particularly interesting as well.
Yeah, it must be amazing, you know, like seeing an old photo of your house to see kind of other people enjoying it. Mm. And so what's your favourite part of the boat then? Because I know you've done a lot of work to her, but obviously you've kept these kind of original features as well. Is there something that every time you walk past it, it sort of makes your heart happy?
I think the canoe stern of Heavenly Days is very distinctive.
Mm.
And people who come on board and dine in that canoe stern, which is mostly where we dine, particularly in the Mediterranean where it's warm enough, is sort of the heart of the boat for guests. And it has a particularly sort of inclusive feel about it. We've had yacht designers come on board and say, actually, this works so well.
Yeah. And is that your favourite part as well, Rory, or do you have a different...
I am. Every time we're in the tender and we drive up to that boat and I look at that hull line, I'm thrilled. I think it's a beautifully designed boat. I would echo Elizabeth's comments. Having a boat for us has expanded our horizon and our lives in ways that we had never anticipated. I think one of the great surprises is that when you have guests on board, is the degree to which it enhances your friendships. You have dinner with somebody, you have a 3 or 4 hour conversation, that was great. But assuming it all goes well, you've got breakfast, lunch, dinner, lying around, reading a book, chatting for a few days at a time. And it has enormously enhanced many friendships. And we've discovered so many interesting things about different people's lives that comes from the consistent proximity with other people. It also means you have to choose your friends quite carefully.
Yeah, you don't want someone you're not that keen on to be stuck with. But you're so right. It's a very different experience going for dinner with someone in London versus living around them for 4 days, travelling with them, exploring. You get to know people on a very different level.
Yeah. Just in case there are any of our guests listening to this podcast, we've never got it wrong, by the way.
Okay. So you say.
No, it's true, actually.
That's good. Well, what does a dream day on board Heavenly Days look like for you? Do you have a kind of routine that you particularly like?
Well, the first dream aspect of it is that you pull on a bathing suit and maybe a caftan. That's all you need to wear. We both like to keep fit. She's got the most amazing top deck, which accommodates physical exercise. Rory likes to swim. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't really be speaking for him on this subject, but he does like swim fairly long distances. Mm. And
getting shorter with the years, it has to be said.
We have an amazing chef who's been with us 9 years now.
Right.
And so the food has just got better and better and better as time's gone on.
Yeah.
We like going to explore new places. We like going ashore.
But we don't like being in port on the dock.
Yeah.
Given the choice, we'll be at anchor. And we'd like to be surrounded by the ocean.
Yeah.
I think the day starts with Guy, the captain, who's our good friend. He's been with us 9 years. Coming back and we go, what do we think we're going to do today? And I said, well, I think we could go and do this, or we could do that, or the wind's coming up, so maybe we should go and do the other. And we learned very early on that if you have a good captain, which we've always been blessed with, you trust the captain's judgment, and you don't ask him to do things that he doesn't recommend.
Yeah.
I use he, because so far we've only had male captains. I'm sure that will change in due course. But we go where the captain thinks it's the right place to go.
Yeah.
He comes to the breakfast table, talks to all our guests and says, I think we're going to go do this today, or we're going to go for a hike, or we're going to go here, or maybe a dive over there or something. And it's variety, different places, different towns. We've had more cups of coffee in small ports than we can think of. And it's just that gentle level of activity. And if your guests want to sit down, read a book and lie in the sun, they can do that.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you mentioned, you've had your captain for a number of years and you've had your chef for a number of years, which I think is quite lucky because some owners I know kind of struggle to get staff to stay on board for longer periods of time. Why do you think you've been able to kind of, keep people that long? Because I think that also really adds to the feel of the boat being kind of quite relaxed and welcoming and things like that.
For my part, Charlotte, I see this as a team effort. We have a part to play. We are the owners. It's our job to give the crew the scope to do their jobs. It's our job to keep the boat in good condition, both from a safety and a comfort and fun point of view. So we're role-playing here. We have a job to play. The captain has his part to play. That he is in charge of the boat. And our understanding that he's in charge and responsible for the people beneath him. I think another thing is, Heavenly Days, fully loaded, we're a crew of six. And everybody's got to do something. Chef's got to pull on a few robes. Nick, who does all the other stuff, occasionally does watch. We've trained them in other disciplines so that they can all do bits of it. So, I know Chef will go out and drive the tender. And we make sure that their jobs are varied and it's a real team effort. But coherence in your crew starts with the captain. And if you respect the captain and their wishes and have good communications, we don't have a boat manager. It's us and the crew, us and the captain. And that makes life a lot easier. We know there are difficult situations on other boats. And I think we now know enough to try and get that as right as we can. And we want it to be fun for them, fun for us. We don't want them exhausted. We want them to be content and smiling because they feel like smiling. It makes it a whole lot easier. And, you know, Katie, who's our chief stewardess, has been on the boat also for 9 years. Met chef on the boat. Married chef.
Ah, oh, did they marry on the boat?
Well, I know.
No.
They on the boat. So we're very proud of that. You know, it's all slightly extended family for us. That I think contributes to a healthy and constructive attitude.
And going back a bit, when you were talking about the refits earlier, I think there's a kind of a view that older yachts are kind of money pits and they require constant maintenance and, you know, they're significantly more expensive than buying a new boat. Do you think that's the case, or do you think that's a bit of a misnomer?
I think with the initial purchase, you could view them as being, there being an added value. If you appreciate the aesthetics and you value the heritage, and the price tag is lower, but you can't avoid the fact that there is a huge maintenance program to keep the yacht looking the way she should.
I'm going to duck the question by saying we've never owned a new boat.
Yes, that's very true.
There are plenty of stories out there of somebody buying a boat and it takes 2 years to get all the systems sorted out. And, you know, that's probably pretty agonising as well when you expect us to be able to sort of get in and drive it.
Yeah.
I can't really make a comparison.
And Hera is obviously significantly older than Heavenly Days. Do you feel that difference? How do they feel different when you're on board?
They feel different because they're such a different size and their purpose is different. I mean, Heavenly Days is meant for ocean, open waters. This boat isn't intended for that. So just from that point of view, of course it feels different.
I think one thing we did with Heavenly Days is we have the original engines. Now, we've had them zero-houred, so they play like new engines. This boat did not have the original engines in, not least because the original ones were petrol.
Right.
So since they weren't original, therefore had no sort of heritage value, we did put new engines to this, and it is a fantastically quiet boat with very, very little emissions. If I could, at some point in this discussion, I would like to talk about environmental aspects of boat
ownership. Please do, yeah.
As we know, there's a lot of effort. First of all, there's a lot more awareness of environmental matters generally. And you've got Yeti and organisations like that where we know a lot of the people involved. A lot of it is designed around new boats, you know, new builds to make sure that leave lower carbon footprints and do less marine damage. But we do need some guidance and some help about for most boats are boats that are already in the water. And how do we improve the performance of those boats? We've taken quite a few steps. You know, we put in zero speed stabilizers, we zero out the engines, we cruise at one knot slower speed, and we're saving about 30% on fuel through a combination of these features. Make our own water, we have no plastic bottles. But it'd be very useful if some set of guidance about easy things, easy wins, how to make the boats perform better so that, frankly, when you do eventually come to sell them, you could have some kind of certificate saying they're at this level of sustainability, etc. And it shouldn't be impossibly challenging. It should be we should be encouraged rather than punished to get these things right. But I feel at the moment that boat owners are having to figure this out for themselves.
Yes, definitely. There is... I don't know if you're familiar with, do you know Water Revolution Foundation?
Yes.
Because I know that that's something they're trying to do. But again, I think you're right in that the focus always tends to be on new builds and, you know, kind of big builders rather than, you're quite right, the number of boats that already exist and are out there.
Well, some of the founders of that are, as it happens, friends of ours. But I think it's probably other organisations that could do it for existing boats. So through the charter situation, should we, for example, say to charter guests, this is what it would cost to carbon offset the use of your trip. Would you be prepared to make a voluntary contribution towards that? Quite a number of steps. We haven't thought this all the way through, but I'm sure this wheel is being invented, but we're all having to feel we're having to invent it for ourselves.
No, it's something I hear often from yacht owners that, you know, it's difficult. There's conflicting information out there, and it can be quite hard to know, you know, if you go for one thing, are you genuinely doing a good thing or not? I think you're very right that if there was a clear set of easy guidelines, probably more people would be on board with that.
Yes.
It's interesting that you say about your fuel savings, because, you know, I've been in a few forums and things with captains, and what they always say is, you know, I know all these different things, but what my owner wants to see is the finances of it. You know, how much extra will this cost me, or how much will this save me? And I think if you can come up with a formula like you just outlined, where you do this, 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 and actually it saves you money, I think most owners would agree that's a no-brainer and probably get on board with it.
Well, there's going to be a lot more focus on that now that the price of fuel is doubled.
Yes, exactly. Is that something you find difficult, owning two boats?
This boat does about 6 litres an hour, 7 litres an hour, this one. I mean, so we're not exactly killing the place. Heavenly Days, we said we've got it down about 25-30%, and fuel price is fuel price. We bought as much as we could earlier on in the season, but later on in the season when we need to replenish, we will be paying whatever the market to price is. More and more markets are charging VAT on that as well.
And have you found, I've heard a lot of sort of supply chain problems at the moment as well. Have you found any difficulties with getting parts or having work done, or not really experienced that?
Nothing that's been crucial, but our captain has relayed quite shocking stories of parts being delayed, not just for a month or so, but a year. Yeah. I mean, wasn't there a story about a gearbox?
Yeah, you know, that theoretically it was going to take 2 years. I mean, I think there are some boats that are not going to get out on the water properly this year.
Yeah, gosh, that's quite shocking.
But the benefit of having a rolling program is we've pretty much got everything in, you know, well within its lifespan and current usage. So hopefully nothing will break that is too difficult to replace, but it is going to be challenging for quite a lot of boats.
Yeah. So you said you've owned her for 20 years, is it, Heavenly Days? Mm-hmm. So, okay, over your 20 years, what are the best things that you've ever done?
Gosh, that's a very difficult question, because we've been to some amazing places. The best thing we've ever done.
Yeah. I'm going to answer a slightly different question. When we first got the children on board, who were then children aged, we were very unsure about what they were going to feel about all this.
Yeah. Did you kind of prep them for it beforehand and kind of talk them through?
We had holidays chartering yachts, so they were very open to the idea. But it was a bit of a revelation for them that suddenly we were going to own our own boat.
So the first day, getting them to like it, not telling them to like it, but getting them to like it was a big sort of fingers crossed moment.
Yeah.
They were out, they were put in the tender and sent off. And we thought they'd be gone about 10 minutes. About 4 hours later, they came back absolutely bright red, exhausted, just couldn't wait to tell us everything about their day. And promptly fell asleep for 12 hours.
And how old were they at that stage? And how many children do you have?
We have 2 children, and they would have been about 11 and 8.
Yeah, something like that. And the following day, our daughter said, I've got this figured out. This is a very small hotel with a very large pool outside.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, I understand that.
And it's amazing what having a nice luxury yacht in the Mediterranean can do for children's loyalty about coming to visit parents on vacation.
Well, that I know that that is something that owners worry about. You know, how can I get my teenage children to come on board? And is there going to be a moment where they don't want to? Have yours just always naturally loved it? Or do you feel like there was an age where you had to kind of pull a few tricks to get them to engage with it?
I think we're very fortunate that they still want to come on holiday with us every year. But we every year we say, well, surely they're not going to want to come next year.
So far, not a problem. But we've always made sure that they can bring their friends with them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean,
sometimes it's just the family. Mm. But other times, most times we say, listen, why don't you bring a couple of your mates? And that's made life a lot easier. And we made one other discovery about 3 or 4 years ago. We also do a little June week on Heavenly. And we rang up guy and said, he said, right, who's coming on the boat? And we just said, actually, it's just going to be the two of us. And guy turned around and said, we wondered when you were going to say that.
Oh, really?
Okay. And it felt very indulgent.
Yeah.
The few little days on the boat, just us,
yeah,
was also very nice. As you can tell, we are, we think we've got ownership figured out. It's a journey, and it takes a little bit of time, especially if you're not that experienced. But we really think we're getting the benefits of that over the last few years, getting the benefits of that.
Yeah.
Successful time on a boat is 30% the boat, 30% the crew, 30% the weather. And we can do two of those. We can get two of those right. And hopefully the people you have on board are also so good and friendly as well.
And you said you're sort of learning along the way. What do you think you've learned in the course of this, and what sort of rookie mistakes do you think you made when you first had the boat?
Thinking everything would work all the time. I mean, what a lie.
Okay.
Planning an itinerary and accepting that it always changes.
Yeah. And ultimately, finding really good people,
okay,
to work with you on the boat, especially starting with the captain, and having, you know, wanting to be happy to see these
right
people, and then hopefully wanting to be happy to see you. Getting the people bit right is terrifically important. And I think now hopefully we're owners who, with enough experience, that
yeah,
a new crew member or captain can say, yeah, they've more or less got it figured out.
Yeah. Do you have any funny stories from over these 20 years of kind of disasters on board, or things with customs officials, or things with pirates, or you know, guests, anything like that?
Well, fortunately, no pirates.
When charter guests are on board, it's they're on board, and what happens is up to them. But
yeah,
at the end of each one of those, we do ask the captain, would you have them back on board? And I have to say, over 10, 15 years, there have been a couple of occasions, and they say, in all honesty, we'd really rather not. And
yeah,
part of getting your crew's trust is then turning around and saying, right, you're never going to see them again.
Yeah. And do you know the reasons why? Are you able to kind of anonymously say what went down?
I think discretion is the best part of valor.
I think discourteousness towards the crew and not treating them properly is very high on that agenda.
Yes.
Yeah.
More than anything else, and frankly, we don't ask.
Yeah,
we just say, "Guy, was that all right?" Yes, chef, was that all right? Yes, fine. Then that's it. I'm sorry, we haven't come up with any funny jokes for you.
That's fine. And then I wanted to ask, so why did you want two boats? Because you already had Heavenly Days and then you bought Hero. So what led to number two?
A moment of irrationality.
Blimey, Charlotte, we didn't even want one boat. yes. Would you like to explain our moment of irrationality?
Which one?
let's do Hero.
I'm not sure, actually. I think you better answer that.
We saw it. It was for sale. It was beautiful. We loved it. It was mad moment of madness.
So it was an impulse buy, basically.
Yes, it was.
And owned by a lovely Dutch couple. And you could just tell, you know, they'd retired. It was just getting a bit much for them. And it was beginning to not be cared for in quite the way they would like. And they have said, we're happy to sell it, but we absolutely insist that it's kept in a traditional manner. And you don't just scoop the hull out and put a new boat inside.
Yeah.
Very sympathetic to our to what we wanted to do. And I think we've got that right. We can't show you around, but there are a lot of original features. But,
yeah.
You know, on the other hand, all the plumbing and the engines are new and stuff like that. So that was a deeply unexpected, spontaneous purchase.
Well, I think that's kind of fabulous. And did you find it much harder owning two boats than one, or was it just the more the merrier?
Hera needed a very significant piece of work to be done. And it was made more complicated by the fact that quite a lot of stuff had to come out.
Right.
The bits you can't see had to be refreshed and renewed, and then we had to put the old bits back in. So that was that. But frankly, having done Heavenly Days, Hera was a cakewalk.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we had very good people working with us on it. We used the same interior designers. We had a great project manager, and I think we were quite fortunate. And I think by the time we did Hera, we had learned a bit about refits and what we felt was appropriate for the boat and what wasn't.
The project manager for Hera, who's now a close personal friend, had done a lot of large boats. And we said, are you sure you want to do this little boat? No, he said, I'm done with large boats. I just want to do nice small boats, beautiful crafted boats. And at the end, we sat down for dinner with him and said, Santa, what do you think? He said, God, I've had it with small boats. He said, give me the larger boats again.
Grass is always greener, I guess. And it's interesting you mentioned the kind of the Dutch couple that you bought it off really wanted it to go to someone that would look after it, because that's something you kind of hear a lot from owners who particularly, you know, owners like yourself who have boats that have really cherished them and done lots of things. Do you worry about kind of what will happen to Heavenly Days and Hera when you no longer want them? Is there a plan for where they'll go next? Or
no, we haven't got that far yet.
There's only so much that you can do on that front, I think.
Mm.
I think when somebody else owns it, they own it.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fairness, the couple who sold us this boat, Hera, have been back on it a few times and have approved of what we've done. I have to say, it was an approbation that we were hopeful they'd give us, but they very much have liked it. I think it's very difficult to put down stipulations and say, thou shalt keep it in this condition.
Yeah.
First of all, it's a condition you can't enforce. And the second issue is, for the avoidance of doubt for any brokers who might be listening, neither of these boats are for sale.
Okay. And do you think, you know, what would make you put them up for sale?
Infirmity and bankruptcy.
Okay. Right.
I think, Charlie, if we just get, we're getting older, at some point it may be not so physically practical, etc. And I think there will be eventually be a natural life to this, but we have not set any horizons yet about the disposal of either of these boats, and we are not interested in another boat.
Really? And there's not one you could see on a port that might be a third impulse?
No.
No. I mean, we don't want a bigger boat. I think we're the only owners on the planet who don't want a bigger boat. We never thought we'd own one. We never thought we'd own two. So the question is a good one. We really don't have a desire for a third boat. We feel completely blessed by the experience these boats have given us. And we don't want it to become stressful to manage.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very sensible. And why wouldn't you be when they're such beautiful boats? I think it makes complete sense that you're happy with them.
That's very kind of you. And we're certain way, the question about what your next owners do about it, there is a sense of custodianship.
We are
the owners, but actually we're safeguarding a tradition of excellence, craftsmanship, lineage, design, etc. And we would hope that when we do pass these boats on, that they do go into hands that are sympathetic to that point of view.
Yeah, well, quite right. I think that's a good place to leave it. Thank you so much for talking to me and for all your time. It's fascinating. And maybe later you can give me a video tour, because from what I can see behind your head, it looks particularly lovely.
Well, you never know. You may have to find yourself in a place where one or both of our boats are resident.
Absolutely. We go to Mallorca quite a lot, actually. So next time I'm in town, I'll drop you a line.
Now you know how to get a hold of us. that would be fine. But listen, we hope that this discussion has suited you. And thank you very much for taking the time and interest to come and seek us out. As you probably hope you understand, we like these boats and we like talking about them.
That's fantastic. Enjoy Champagne Country. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Big Boat Interview, which is a part of the Boat Briefing podcast. The programme is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Tune in on Fridays to hear all the news from the world of super yachting and our special data reports. And don't forget to like and subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. See you next time.